Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Marty Goldenson, in for Brian. Somehow there's always time to discuss the next budget out of Albany, because it's always late. True to form, New York's governor, Senate, the Assembly are still dueling with just 3 short days until the new fiscal year begins. Joining us to take a closer look at the lack of a deal in the state capitol is Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the Daily News. Ken Lovett, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So where is here? Where are you precisely?
Oh, I'm in Albany. It's the Senate is in town today, and they are going to pass an extender, which basically will allow government not to shut down when they miss the deadline on April 1st.
Now, the extender doesn't do much, though, right? It just pays, what, Medicare and payroll? Is that
it? Well, it'll pay payroll, Medicaid, schools. It'll make sure that government keeps functioning without a new budget in place.
So and what does that set up as the next deadline? So what's the real deadline?
Well, some people think it could be after the election. I'm not one of those, mind you, but, I mean, there is no real deadline. Theoretically, they can just keep passing extender after extender.
Oh, I see. So this extender just runs to April 14th, but they could pass another one.
Right, exactly.
So what does it not cover?
We've seen that in the past. I mean, in the past, during the Pataki era, they sometimes went into August.
Right,
without a budget.
But, Ken, what does it not cover if it covers state payrolls and emergencies?
No, it doesn't cover local agencies. It doesn't cover some vendors. It doesn't cover a lot of the non-emergency kind of stuff. So basically, if you're a nonprofit and you're relying on state funding, you may not see that so quickly. It also should be, there is a law in place that the lawmakers themselves stop getting paid if the budget is late.
Now, there's motivation to get it done.
Yes, but in the past, despite that motivation, they've gone long times, weeks and months without doing it.
Now, of course, we know that the state is in big trouble with a near $9 billion deficit, right?
Yeah, 9.2.
Right. So, every time I turn around, somebody tries to propose new taxes, a soda tax, sell wine in grocery stores, whatever. Any new revenue going to come in, or has that all been rejected?
Well, it depends who you ask. The state Senate, which is razor thin, the Democrats have a razor thin majority, they have said they do not want to do any new taxes. They've rejected the governor's push for wine in liquor stores. They've rejected the governor's push to raise the cigarette tax by $1, which would bring it to a nationwide high, a state tax of $3.75. They rejected the governor's push for some other taxes. The Assembly has rejected a lot of that stuff as well, but would go for a cigarette tax. They do support that.
I see. And there's another tobacco angle here, right? They're trying to squeeze out more money by reworking the tobacco settlement money. What is that about?
Again, what the Senate has proposed, and they proposed this last year, when they were trying to do a deficit relief package, is that a couple of years ago, about a decade ago, when the tobacco companies had settlements with the states, the state took theirs. They borrowed against it. So now what they're talking about doing is basically refinancing it and pushing the payments out further into the future and taking about a $700 million surplus this year off the money. What
right.
that would do is it would fill the holes this year, but it would be what's called here as a one-shot. It's a non-recurring revenue. It's a one-time revenue of $700 million, and it just, to a lot of people, pushes the problems further into the future while also pushing the debt payments further into the future.
I'm having a sort of a deja broke here. I covered the 1975, belly up when the state went sort of belly up and the city got taken over by the state. This is a kind of short-term solution, and they're talking about other kinds of borrowing, aren't they, to meet the budget gap?
Well, they're talking about the Lieutenant Governor, Richard Ravitch, has proposed to allow up to $2 billion of borrowing the next 3 years, in each of the next 3 years. But what he has tacked onto it, his plan, would be some financial restraints. It would be an oversight board, not quite the type of power that the one that oversaw the city
Emergency
had.
Financial Control Board, yeah.
Right, but it would be an oversight board. It would give the governor in times of fiscal crisis the ability to make cuts almost unilaterally if the budget was out of balance for a certain amount of time. So he says in the short term, the borrowing would help fill the budget gaps right now, but in the long term, it would enact some fiscal restraint and give the power to the governor to deal with that with future crises. The Assembly has bought into the borrowing part of it, the $2 billion, but has watered down the fiscal restraint portion of it.
You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC Radio. I'm Marty Goldenson, in for Brian, and I'm talking with Daily News Albany Bureau Chief Ken Levitt about the ticking clock to the budget deadline in New York State. So if we're not raising a lot of extra money, though there is some borrowing, in the end, what type of cuts do you think we're likely to see? What can they get away with?
Well, we do know there will be education cuts because the governor proposed about $1.4 billion in education cuts. The Senate went along with every one of them, and nobody thinks they would do that again when it was real, but they say they backed them. The Assembly is looking to restore about $600 million of it. So even then, you're talking about, you know, 800,000, 700,000, wherever they end up in, million, 800 million, 700 million in education cuts. You will see some health care cuts. I mean, those are going to be the biggest ones. You'll see agency cuts. I mean, everywhere across the board is going to get cut.
And well, there's just, I guess, no way around this. You know, something odd happened at the last minute. The governor this weekend, he wants to make his stalled proposal to impose an annual cap on school and other local property tax increases a part of the budget negotiations. Well, why is he bringing this into the picture again just days before the deadline?
I mean, a lot of people believe that if you cut, it's going to trickle down, and then the localities would end up raising their taxes, which have gone up dramatically. It's not as big a city issue as it is, you know, the suburbs and upstate, but it's a huge issue in those areas. And frankly, the Senate is willing to buy into it, or at least part of it, because they feel that their members, you know, they're looking to retain majority and hopefully grow their majority in their eyes, and they can't do it if they don't do any kind of property tax relief.
Ah, yes.
And so they're more likely to do something along those lines, or at least something regarding property taxes. The Assembly, where the majority is ironclad, and it's a New York City-dominated chamber, they're less willing to do it. They don't feel it as necessary.
Shifting gears just a little bit. A few weeks ago, we weren't even sure if Governor Patterson would still be in office at this point. Has this controversy surrounding the governor affected the timing of the budget negotiations?
It depends who you ask. I mean, you know, the legislature has made him a scapegoat in that regard. Oh, he's not engaged. He's been distracted. But the governor argues, and rightfully so, the governor says, hey, you know, I've done what I had to do. I put out my budget in January. I put out my, you know, 21-day amendments, you know, to amend that proposal. And the legislature, it's the ball's in their court now. Now, certainly the governor needs to be involved, and certainly other governors have taken the process and tried to lead, and we have not yet seen that from the governor here. But the lawmakers could easily come together, come to some kind of agreement, and try to work it out then with the governor. We haven't seen that yet.
Yes, and when you look to Washington, you see an energized president as a result of some victories. Do you see an energized or a more effective-looking governor because of the money question? This $9 billion is so central, and that was, you know, before the latest scandal, the way the governor was getting his reputation back as a fiscal conservative.
I don't know if I see a more energized governor. You know, he spent a couple weeks there fighting for his political life. He bought at least some time, if not the rest of his term. But I think, you know, he doesn't like the lawmakers, the legislature. They don't like him. They know he could be here for the remainder of the term. They know that they have to get through the budget somehow, so they will be forced to work with one another. But I'm not quite sure I see the governor as energized at this point.
Yes, well, perhaps not. Who do you think is going to get hit the hardest in this budget cut? Is it going to be the schools? Is it going to be health care?
I think those will be the two, which makes sense because, I mean, 55% of the budget goes towards schools and health care. They've also been, particularly the schools, the most protected from cuts. Last year, when they did mid-year cuts, health care did take a hit, but the schools were put on notice. They said, we will not cut you mid-year, but come the new budget, you are going to have to, you know, carry a share. Now, how big a share that will be, we'll see. The governor says right now that the legislature is about $1 billion short in the cutting he wants to see. And he says, before we can talk about borrowing, about revenue raisers, we need to do this cutting. You know, we need to cut and cut realistically and make sure the cuts are recurring.
We've touched on this before, but let me raise it again. The Democrats' majority in the state Senate is slim, to say the least. How is this played into the Senate's negotiations on the budget?
Well, it's difficult because, you know, one Democrat who strays from the reservation could hold up the whole proceedings. The Republicans have made it clear they will not accept a budget that has any kind of major cuts to schools. They will not accept a budget that raises taxes or borrows. So basically, they're not going to give them any votes whatsoever on the final budget in all likelihood.
How come they go after these difficult cuts after health care and after schools, given that they're so contentious? Is it because that's where the money is?
That's where the money is. It's 55% of the budget. But it's also the politically riskiest and the most sensitive. So if you're a suburban Democrat and you're trying to keep your seat, then you know, you've got a problem because you're not going to want to vote for school cuts to your district because the Republicans are going to use it against you. And as I said, right now the margin is 32-30 in the Senate, 32 Democrats, 30 Republicans. So really, and you need 32 votes to pass anything. So it's a delicate balancing act for the Senate leaders, and we'll see if they'll be able to bring it home.
Do you think that it's going to be a less delicate balance after redistricting? April 1st isn't only the deadline for the budget, it's also Census Day. And in fact, the next guest we have coming up is going to look at redistricting and how it might affect things. But could redistricting in New York State mean less gridlock in Albany?
Well, that's why this coming election in November is so crucial for the Republicans in particular. New York is trending Democrat, you know, and it's just a...
No, you're not talking about a political trend, but the fact that there are just the growing population in the urban areas versus rural, right?
Oh, right, and registered voters are Democrats, and I think 5-3, and obviously even higher in New York City. So for the Republicans who have lost the, you know, they don't have any statewide office, they don't have the U.S. Senator, they don't have the governor, the attorney general, and they lost the Senate, which they had held every year since 1965. So if they lose now the Senate again, if they can't reclaim the majority, a lot of people feel because of redistricting, that'll be the end of the Republican Party in New York for, you know, two decades or more. The Democrats know that if they win, they can build on their majority because they get to redraw the lines next year.
Ken Levitt, thanks for being with us. We're going to have to leave it there. And okay. We will certainly keep an eye on Albany over the next few days and weeks and maybe months to see where the budget is headed. Ken Levitt, again, is Albany Bureau Chief for the Daily News. And coming up next, we'll dive deeper into what the census could mean for redistricting.